today I just wanted to talk to you about engaging our neighbors. And some of you might know me. I used to go here 11 years ago, or might know my face. I was probably 20 pounds skinnier then. But I had little ones when I was here, and I lived in Montgomery Village. So this area has developed and changed so much even in the last 11 years. And that's some of what I want to talk to you about. So you have a little handy dandy sheet. And I, unfortunately, when we get down to point three, I left some blanks for you to fill in, because the last time I taught in here, I had tables, and so I just assumed there'd be tables, or otherwise I wouldn't have left blanks. So if you want to fill in the blanks with a pen and just kind of press on your hand, that's fine. Sorry about that. I should have coordinated it better. So engaging our neighbors. And it's funny, because like this guy right here in the circle, there's a guy in the middle and then the guy to the right. My husband's like, yeah, he knows that guy. He's one of the guys my husband would always see when he was going out witnessing in New York City. So it's kind of wild. These are like real people that all of these people are here in the United States. They're not pictures of people who, you know, we didn't go overseas to take these pictures. They're pictures of people who live in the U.S. The guy on the far left, my husband didn't witness to him, but he did share the gospel with Tibetan Buddhist monks when we lived in New York City. And that guy's kind of dressed, I'm thinking he's probably a Buddhist monk. So these people are all here. In fact, there was an article, you can't see that very well, it's called by Wallet Hub, where is the most, actually this is NBC News referring to Wallet Hub's article, where is the most diverse city in the United States? And some of you may have seen this, but Gaithersburg came up as the most diverse city. Okay, so if you look, they're looking at racial diversity, economic diversity, and household diversity. So, you know, all the different racial groups that are here in Gaithersburg came out number one for that. Economic diversity, we have very wealthy and very poor people here in Gaithersburg. Household diversity, we have single parent homes, we have blended families, we have gay households, we have all sorts of different things here. So very, very diverse. And Silver Spring was number four, Germantown number five, Rockville number 14. So in the top 20 for the United States, top 14, Frederick, Maryland as well is on there, so are in this area, okay? So we are in a really diverse area. It's weird because when we were in New York, one thing my husband and I noticed is that there would be a Hispanic neighborhood, and there would be an Arab neighborhood, and there would be an African-American neighborhood, and there'd be a Jewish neighborhood. So New York's diverse if you look at New York as a whole, but if you zero in on one zip code, a lot of times neighborhoods aren't diverse. Whereas here in Gaithersburg, neighborhoods are diverse, okay? I had one person here at Covenant Life tell me that on her street, she was like, not on her street, I'm sorry, in her neighborhood, over 35 nations were represented, okay? So when we're talking about reaching our neighbors, I was just talking to someone yesterday, and we were talking about, partnering with their church, and he was like, well, you know, you guys are like talking about reaching, you know, immigrants, but we're just trying to get people in our church to talk to their neighbors. And I was like, their neighbors are immigrants, okay? Their neighbors are the nation. So it's not that this either or type of thing. Okay, one of the things that we do in Global Gates is we focus specifically on unreached people groups. And if you haven't heard that phrase, an unreached people group is a group of people where 2% or less of that population is Christian. Okay, so think Muslim countries, think Hindu countries, think Buddhist countries, okay? So in the whole DMV, from Baltimore down to Northern Virginia, and then going sideways as well to PG County, out to Frederick County, these are the official numbers of people or countries that are represented with a lot of unreached people groups. India, China, Vietnam, Pakistan, and Iran. This is the only thing, though. These are sort of and not really accurate. And what I mean by this is the census numbers did not include people who are international students. So if you look at Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland, Georgetown, George Mason, American University, there are over 30,000 international students when you add up all of the different universities in the area. The other thing this doesn't count is people who are here illegally, okay? And I know Americans tend to think only people from Spanish-speaking countries are, you know, illegal or undocumented, but since I've been doing this work, I've met many people from all over the world, from China, from Pakistan, from India, who don't have their papers to be here. They came as tourists on a tourist visa and just never left, okay? And that's actually 50% of the people who are undocumented came legally. They came on a tourist visa and then just never left, okay? Other thing this doesn't account for is people who are here temporarily working for 6 months to 2 years at a company. So a lot of people from India are here for a short time, okay? They're not permanent residents. They're here and then they're gonna go back to their country. Same with a lot of international students. 85% of international students go back to their country. So even though we all might know somebody who came and studied here and stayed, a lot of them go back. And so that's why this ministry is dear to our heart, because we have people from countries like Saudi Arabia who are gonna go back to Saudi Arabia, and they have no chance, really. I mean, I shouldn't say no, with God everything is possible. They have very little chance of hearing the gospel in Saudi Arabia. There are still public executions in Saudi Arabia, even though the government would deny it. I've talked personally to my Saudi friends who are like, yeah, that still happens, okay? So leaving your faith in Saudi Arabia is a big deal, and you don't have churches. It's not even legal to have a church building there. So these people are here, and they might be here for 6 months, they might be here for 2 years, and they might be here for the rest of their lives. But they're from a background where if they were going through a hard time, they would never think to walk into a church, most likely. They would think, I'm going to go to the mosque, I'm going to go to the temple, okay? So somehow we need to learn how to reach out to them and not be afraid to reach out to them, okay? Over 35% of the adults in Montgomery County were born outside of the United States. So when we're talking about reaching our neighbors, you have a high chance, you have 1 in 3 chance that the people you're reaching out to may not originally be from the United States, may not have been born here, okay? All right, so we have an amazing opportunity. Leviticus says, when a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. This is speaking to the nation of Israel. I am the Lord your God. And it's just a reminder from the Bible to, you know, put ourselves in other people's shoes. We've all, actually maybe we all haven't, but many of us have been out of the country, or many of us have been in a neighborhood where nobody looked like us all of a sudden. And we know how that feels, and we know how that sticks out. And that's how some of our friends feel on a regular basis. I have some of my Muslim friends will say how self-conscious they feel sometimes just walking in certain areas wearing their headscarf, okay? Another verse. Jesus, when he saw the crowds, Jesus had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest field. And what I would like to proposition to you today is that all of us can be harvesters, okay? Not all of, I know that not everyone here is called to do what I do, who on a regular basis I'm harvesting. So I have this huge field, okay? Your harvest field might just be this big, but it's still a harvest field. So it's not about how large your harvest field is, it's just remembering that you are a harvester, okay? So I'm gonna tell you two stories about Ravi and Yogi. Does anyone know what flag that is? Anyone have a guess where Ravi and Yogi might be from based on their names? India, yeah, so that's the Indian flag. And Ravi and Yogi are not a couple. I'm just gonna tell you stories about them, even though they're both from India, but they do not know each other, to my knowledge. Ravi is a man that my husband met while he was prayer driving. He was just driving through an area where he had heard that a lot of people were moving to from other countries, and he was just praying that the Lord would guide him to somebody, and he felt like the Lord said, go into a giant grocery store, so he went to a giant grocery store, and then he felt like the Lord was like, okay, he's here. So my husband's just walking around looking, and he sees Ravi, by the way, it's not his real name, and
then my husband, the professional evangelist, freezes up and is just looking at Robbie because he's like, I don't know what to do next, even though I teach, you know, seminars on this. And so Robbie's like, can I help you? And Robbie works at Giant. And so my husband says, where's the applesauce? And great opening line for the gospel. And Robbie's like, here, let me show you. And as they're walking, my husband's like, hey, I hear, you know, I detect a little bit of an accent. Are you from another country? And Robbie says he's from India. My husband can greet people in like 10 different languages. Like, I'm not exaggerating. It might even be more than that. So he greets him in Hindi. All of a sudden, Robbie's pulling out his phone, dialing. My husband's like, what's going on? And he's like, I'm calling my son. His English is better than mine. You have to come over to our house for dinner. Okay, so that was 2.5 years ago. And that was 2.5 years ago, and we've been to their house. I don't even know how many times. We're just there Tuesday night eating a meal. This family, Robbie works 2 full-time jobs, 1 at Walmart, 1 at Dunkin' Donuts. His wife works full-time at Dunkin' Donuts. His son works full-time at Dunkin' Donuts and is a student at University of Maryland full-time. And their daughter works at a doctor's office. She's a nurse, okay? So between them, they have 5 jobs, 4 people in the family, and they want us to come over every Tuesday night, okay? He wakes up at 3 in the morning to go to work at Dunkin' Donuts, and then straight from, he works 8 hours at Dunkin', has half hour to get to Walmart, and then works 8 hours at Walmart, but they want us to come over, okay? So they told us, you guys are only American friends, okay? One of the things he said was, he's like, you know, in India, after you get home from work, everyone's outside, you're sitting on your front porch, you're talking to people as they walk by. He's like, so I started doing that here, and my neighbor comes home every day, and he pulls into his garage, and then I see him come outside, and he walks his dog, and he talks to his dog, but he won't talk to me, okay? So we have this image that people are like, I don't want to talk to you. But really, Robbie's like, hi, oh, okay, all right. Nod the head. Okay, that's how it works here. Yogi is a story that I was at a deli and Yogi was working and, you know, did the similar thing to my husband. Oh, I hear a little bit of an accent. Are you, you know, where were you born? And she says she was born in India. And I was like, oh, you know, what sort of things do you do? And she's just like, I work at the deli and I raise my kids. And in fact, I've only worked here a few months and I was home with my children for 15 years. And I was like, so do you hang out with a lot of Indians around? She's like, no. Do you hang out with Americans? No. She's like, I actually don't have any friends. I've lived here 16 years. Okay? And I actually share that story because I did not follow up. I just lost touch with her and she's gone. She doesn't work there anymore. Okay, so it was a missed opportunity on my part. We had this great connection, great conversation, and I didn't get her info, and the next time I went in there, they were like, oh, she doesn't work here anymore. So you might be wondering, okay, these are great stories, but what can I do? Because this is how my life looks. Okay? So, I wanted to bring some reality into this because this, you might be like, you know, I'm just like Ravi and Yogi. I barely have time for friends that I already have. How does this apply to me? I'm just trying to figure out how to get dinner on the table, how to potty train my kid, how to get my other one to karate and not mess up this one's nap time, and I haven't had a quiet time in 5 months, okay? So I just wanted to let you know right from the start that I know what the season of life is like. I know how hard it is. I know that you're just thinking, when will this kid ever sleep through the night? When will I ever be able to sleep alone in my bed without my husband? Actually, you probably might want both. Like, I just want no one in the bed at all. I need a break. So, so I just wanted to give you some practical tips. So, that was probably prophetic, right? No, just kidding. And my practical tip is something that you probably heard if you came last month, and it's that the playground is your harvest field, okay? When you're in the places that you naturally visit with your kids, just keep your antenna up. That's your harvest field. There are other people who are from other countries in the exact same season of life as you, and they're sitting at the park bench. You know, I used to laugh. I used to live in Miami when my first one was born, and it was weird living there because some people would look at me and assume I spoke Spanish. Other people would look at me and assume I didn't speak Spanish. And they were always the fun ones if they talked about me in Spanish because I could understand them. And so, but they would, you know, I would have opportunities to either eavesdrop on conversations where they were like, and my son when he was young had bright blonde hair and bright blue eyes. And so they would be like, "Es la mamá? Is she the mom? Like, what? Wait, what is this? Is she a nanny?" What? And then I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, I can speak Spanish, and yeah, he's my son, and yeah, my husband doesn't look like me, has a different skin color, and yeah, that the kid turned out like him, and whatever." But I would get to talk to people at the playground, okay? And so if you're looking at your notes, because I just realized I wasn't looking at the notes, I'm just jumped in, I'm on point number 3, where it says, how can I participate in this given my season of life, and some practical tips. And the first one is to spread seed everywhere. And so that just means as you are going about your life, you can, yeah, I heard some of your testimonies and you were just dropping little things in to the conversation. Here, Jesus loves you. That's really all. That's all it takes. One of the things some of the ladies were asking me before, like, how do you get into these conversations with people? Or how do you find women? You know, I do Bible studies with Muslims. How do you find people to do Bible studies with? And I'm like, I tell people when I first meet them, when they say, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I like to help people with English. And I love to do Bible studies with people, especially people who don't know anything about Christianity. And that's just kind of my little, you know, dangling. And I have people go, I don't know anything about Christianity. I want to learn. Now, that's not everybody. In fact, that's the minority, but that's what God does. There are people who go, yeah, I want to learn. And so I just spread seed everywhere. If you think about the parable of the sower, where there were the 4 different places where the seed fell, remember it fell on what? What are some of the places? The rocky path, the weeds and thorns, and then on fertile ground, right? And when he's throwing the seed, he sounds kind of like a dumb farmer, because it's like, who throws seeds on paths, and who throws seeds on weeds, and who throws seeds on, what was the other one? Rocks. Yeah, it's like, that's not, you know, we all have seen farmers, you know, even if we don't know anything about farming, we know you're supposed to throw the seed on fertile ground. My husband calls it the parable of the blind farmer, because it's like, he's just throwing seed everywhere, and he doesn't know, okay? But the thing is, at what Jesus is trying to tell us is we don't know what other people's hearts are like. We don't know what kind of soil they have. And so we're just throwing things out. And 75% of the people are going to be like, some of that soil that's not interested, or they're kind of interested and then it withers away, or the cares of this life come along. But 25% of the soil is going to be ready. Okay? And so when somebody isn't interested and it's the rocky soil or this or that, we just move on. Yeah. Right? One of the things my husband and I do is we're like, Lord, lead us to people who are that fertile soil, who are ready. And so when we come up against people who are like, I'm not interested, we're like, oh, okay, great. We're still friendly. We're still their friend. We might not spend as much time invested in that friendship unless the Lord really puts it on our heart. We have a couple of people where we just feel like God has us with them for the long haul, even though they're not at all interested. We're just their friends. We've even gone on vacation with this Iranian couple who's not interested in Christianity at all, but they just like being around us for some reason, okay? So you're just spreading seeds. So you're at the park, or you're sitting waiting for your kids to get out of gymnastics lessons, or wherever you are, you're just dropping little things in the conversation, just a little seed, and seeing who will bite, and seeing what kind of soil it is. And if they look at you like you're a freak, oh well, you move on, right? Or they look at you and go, huh, that's interesting. Okay, one of the things we've come up with, that my husband came up with actually, he's really good with like anacronyms. And so he came up with this anacronym called PANDAS. And these are just things that are conversation starters to help you if you see somebody who's from another country, to help you just get the conversation going and seeing where their interest may lie. Okay, so pandas. Oh, you know what? So I skipped. I said, remember the playground is your harvest field was A. B was spread seed everywhere. And you know what? I'm going to go back to that because I did want you guys to name some places that you go on a regular basis. So are there some places that just in your normal life within a two-week period, and you can just write them down, and if you want to share and shout them out, because other people might be like, oh, I don't know, I just go to the playroom and the nursery and church, and that's it. So are there any places you guys normally go in your life? Grocery store?
Swimming pool?
Library? Anywhere else? Music lessons?
My front yard.
Front yard. Awesome. Backyard, yeah. All of those are just places that you go, taking walks in your neighborhood. You might be taking your kids for a walk, okay? All of those sort of things. So those are the places where we can spread seed. Okay, so C, pandas. Okay, so remember the pandas. P stands for population, okay? So you can ask people like, oh, are there a lot of people here from Bangladesh? Okay, how long have you lived here? And just it's just something that gets you going. When what I have found is most of my international friends, if you genuinely show an interest, they're interested in talking to you. Especially with regardless of where your politics stand, there are a lot of people with the election of Trump who assume that 50% of Americans are against them. Okay, I'm not saying that's how every immigrant is thinking or feeling, but you showing an interest, like, oh, and one note, if somebody does not have an accent, you might not want to say, where are you from? People always ask me where I'm from, and I'm like, America, okay? So usually if I hear a little bit of an accent, I'm like, oh, you have an interesting, voice or whatever, where are you from? But if they look like they're from somewhere else, but they talk like totally like this, they probably are just from here, and you might not want to do some of these pandas things with them, okay? That's just a little side note. All right, so arrivals, like when did you come? Are a lot of people in the area from your country? Or is there a certain place where everybody lives? We've found one of the outreach things that we did here at Covenant Life a few years ago, we sent people out prayer walking, and we discovered an apartment complex of like 20 buildings that's almost 95% Indian. Like 20 buildings, it's like you're seeing people walking around in saris, et cetera. So by asking these sort of questions, and by the way, later I'm going to give you my contact info, because if you find stuff like that, my husband and I want to know about those places, because this is what we do. And we want to be able to, we have people who are anxious to get to know internationals even more. So if you find little enclaves like that, we're like, wow, all these Indian people live here, all these Nepali people, supposedly, we have all these Nepali people tell us that a lot of Nepali live in Cider Mill, but whenever we go there, everyone we meet is Spanish speaking, so we're always like, I guess all the Nepalis are like in their houses, in their apartments, we don't know. But anyway, but those are just some of the things for Global Gates Ministry, as a side note, that's helpful for us so that we can know where to target ministry. Okay, needs, like you find out somebody's only been here a few months, like what's been hard for you? What help would you need? How would my church be able to serve you? Or how would my family be able to serve you, okay? Some people aren't going to want to share this because in their culture it might be like shameful to be like, oh, I need this, this, and this. Other people will just spill it all out, okay? So it just kind of depends. Oh, my church has an ESL ministry. Again, that's only if somebody's English is really bad. Don't say it if they just have a slight accent, but you can understand them. We don't want to insult people. So be spirit-led, pray. Next, what do you do? Or what does your husband do? Why did you guys come here? Oh, he's in IT. Oh, he's studying at Johns Hopkins. Or, oh, he's here on a residency program, etc. A lot of people are at NIST from other countries. So you can just ask. Is there a certain area of town where they live in? And then spirituality. So what religion are most people from your country? Oh, it's mostly a Muslim country? Wow, are there mosques around here that you can attend? Do you attend one of them? Just, this is the one people are the most scared to ask, is the spirituality one. in many countries, if you don't talk about religion, it's not important to you. Okay, and I say many countries, I'm not talking about Western countries, I'm not talking about Europe, okay? I'm not talking about Canada or Australia. Many countries that have high Hindu and Muslim populations, it's just normal to talk about religion, okay? My my Pakistani friends, like, this is how they introduce my husband. They're like, this is, well, he's a pastor, okay? And she was like, well, I don't have a church, but that's, they don't know what to call what he does. With our Pakistani friends, we've been very open. We don't say we're missionaries there, so I guess that's not too open. But we don't, they know that we're, you know, we do Christian ministry, and they, the only word they know is pastor. And that's how he just, that's how all the Pakistanis in Frederick know Marshall as the pastor. But it's normal. And so now they actually will ask my husband questions. So in Christianity, does it work like this? Well, Muhammad taught this in Christianity. And it's just this natural thing. If they know that you're a person who takes your faith seriously, they will want to, they'll know, oh, this is something, someone I can talk to about these things. A few years ago, I was invited to a tea by some ladies who are from Saudi Arabia who go to Hood College, which is in Frederick. And these are ladies that if you saw them on the street, all you would see are their eyes. They were all black, and you just only see their eyes, okay? And they invited me and two other ladies from my church, and one of them was friends with them, which was my inn. And so there are three Saudi girls and three American girls. And I asked one of them, because one of them was married, I was like, so how did you and your husband meet? Like, how does that work in your country? Like, were you arranged? And she went and told me the whole story of how, you know, they came to become married. And then she turned to me and said, so tell me your story. How does it work in America? How did you meet your husband? And I decided to talk to her the exact same way I would talk to a Christian, minus using Christian lingo. So I didn't use Christian lingo, but I told her. So I was like, we both were in college. We went to the same campus ministry, which a Christian group is what I said. We were in the same Christian group at college. And, you know, we prayed. And you know, I just told her exactly the way I would tell anyone in here. And at the end of the story, she was like, you're a serious Christian, aren't you? And I was like, I try to, you know, take my faith seriously. And she was like, I've been in your country 2 years. You're the first serious Christian I've met. So she wasn't turned off by my story that I prayed. And she was a very religious Muslim. And for her, it felt good to meet a very religious Christian, okay? So don't be afraid to bring up spirituality. Again, just like with Americans, if they're not interested, they'll just be like, oh, I don't get a mosque. And that's okay, right? Bring people into how you live. So one of the things we'll often do is, hey, we're having a cookout, okay? Hey, I'm taking a walk with my, you know, son in the stroller. You want to join us? Hey, I'm going to be back at the park on Thursday afternoon. You want to meet here? We're not saying, hey, start this whole new thing. Bring work into your life. We're saying whatever you're already doing, see who God wants you to bring into it, and just keep doing what you're already doing. So we're not trying to get you to you know, add this big plan and of ministry to your life. We're just saying live this as you go about giant grocery store or wherever. Okay. So we're on, that was D. Bring people into your life. Some questions you can ask is, you want to meet at the park again? Have you been to story time at the library? I'm going there. Just different things like that. Number four, though, I do want everyone to be aware of cultural considerations. And so just realize that people greet differently. So if somebody doesn't, most women in other cultures, women, female to female, shaking hands, touching, all that's fine. But if you do bring somebody over to your house, they might not want to shake your husband's hand, okay? Another thing is, if I meet somebody who they seem way more, I take a kind of a mental picture of how they're dressed, and if they are more conservative according to their religion, when I hang out with them again, I dress more conservatively. I will wear things like this. I won't have my sleeves showing. I won't have shorts on. I'll have like capris or something just to not have any barriers. I don't think that. So don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying shorts are wrong, wearing a sleeveless shirt is wrong. I'm saying I'm just trying to have as little barriers between me and them as possible, especially if I'm going to meet their family, like their husband, okay? Male-female interaction, I've talked about that. Concept of family, a lot of these guys, they'll be like, I live with my family, and then you'll find out it's like 30 people because it's like aunts, uncles, cousins, or whatever. So just be aware that it might look differently. Concept of time, I think everyone knows that in other countries, saying that I'll be at your house at 3 o'clock and not getting there until 3:45 is like normal and not a big deal. So if you do start reaching out to internationals and they're running late, don't get panicky about it. The Lord will meet you in that. It'll be okay, really. Some countries really value being introverted over being extroverted. So somebody might be more quiet. Don't take that to mean they're not interested in friendship with you. It just could mean they need to. You need to break through different barriers first. They need to know she really does want to be my friend. Personal space. Most of the cultures I deal with, most of the Muslim and Hindu cultures, I haven't noticed personal space being an issue. With a lot of Latino cultures, which my grandmother is Puerto Rican, it seems like personal space is smaller. So, and being touchy and kissy-kissy is more just whatever, so just go with it if you're not naturally like that. Meal times, people might want to eat at weird times if they want to get together with you. So you're thinking like lunches at noon or 12:30 and they're thinking lunches at 2. You're thinking dinners at 5 or 6 and they're thinking dinners at like 7 or 8 or 9. So just, again, flexibility of just being aware. The next one, pets in the house. For some, you know, there are like over 23 countries that are predominantly Muslims. I can't speak for all of them. And I can't speak for every Muslim in the world, but for some, seeing a dog walking around your house is like seeing a chicken or a fox walking around inside of your house or a cow. Like some outdoor dogs are outdoor animals and they're unclean. And so if you're gonna have somebody over, vacuum really well to get up the dog hair and either, you know, put your dog in a place where it's not going to run around and freak them out, potentially. Okay, it's just something to know. Wash your hands a lot, too. You know, I remember I was in Brazil on a mission trip, and I can speak a little bit of Portuguese, and we were going to be cooking for the Brazilian team that we had been working with, and they had served us so much, and so we decided before we left we'd cook for them an authentic American meal, hamburgers and whatever. And they pulled me aside and they're like, we're really uncomfortable eating the food that you guys are preparing. And I was like, why? And they're like, do Americans not know to wash their hands? Like, no, like we didn't. And in some cultures, it's almost like this ceremonial thing. I hadn't noticed it before with Brazilians, but we had been doing work in the favelas, which are like the slums. And they're like, everyone just walked in and just started grabbing food. And it's like, do you know how many diseases are in the slum? Like, and so I went and I was like, guys, wash your hands. Wash all the vegetables. But anyway, that was more of just because we had been working in an area where people had body lice and all sorts of things, and they just felt like the Americans didn't really have hygiene. So anyway, other cultures, it's more ceremonial. A lot of Muslim cultures, it's just like, it's just important to wash your hands and stuff like that. So just be aware of that. Privacy. The reason I change names is because one time my husband told somebody at our church that he had been, you know, that he had had a good conversation with a guy who owned a shop in Frederick, and the person from our church went into the shop and said, hey, I hear you're good friends with Bill, and he's been talking to you about Christianity. And that was not good. So then the guy's like, my mosque is going to find out. Okay, so if having people open up to you, don't go sharing their business. And if you do share a story with somebody to pray for them, you know, because you want your friends to pray for them, just make sure you say, hey, when you go into Silver Spoon or XYZ place, please don't mention this because they might feel talked about behind their back. Sometimes Christians are used to this church environment where everybody's just sharing. Not all cultures are like that. So just be aware of people's privacy and guarding it. If they open up to you, it's like they've just given you this little gem and they're not expecting you to share their gem with, you know, 40 people in your small group. And then work. A lot of times, I already told you about Ravi, who works two full-time jobs, but he wants us to come over every week. So I just find that some of my international friends have more stamina than some of my American friends. Friendship is worth being tired for. I mean, that's something to write down. Friendship is worth being tired for. We say we want friendship, but if we're tired in America, we're very comfortable being like, oh, I had a busy week. Okay, and a lot of other cultures, that just doesn't cross your mind to cancel because you're tired. Okay, so it in fact, for some people, that would be hurtful, like to be like, wait, you're not coming for dinner because you're tired? Really? Okay, one person was like, my people live tired. Like, isn't that's just life. Really? So just be aware of that. You know, so when we can't make it to Ravi's house, I mean, we don't go every week. We just can't. But we usually have something, we don't say, we're tired. Okay, we just don't say that to people. So now I've talked about these cultural things, and sometimes what happens is, all of a sudden, you have this mountain in front of you. Like, at first, you know, you're excited, like, oh, yeah, oh, I do see people with head coverings or women wearing saris, and I've kind of been afraid to talk about to them. Oh, cool, pandas, and you've given me some tools. And then I talked about culture stuff, and you're like, whoa, what other cultural things don't I know? Okay, now I know about my dog, but what about this? What? Oh, no. And so then you're afraid. So I want to tell you a story that'll take fear away, and it's my dad's story. So my dad is African-American from Alabama, and he's in his 80s. So he grew up when you had signs like this up, okay? And he had to use the colored restroom, and he had to go to the colored, you know, whatever, water fountain, thank you. Life was very separate for whites and blacks in the South when my dad grew up. And when my dad became 18 years old, he joined the military, and all of a sudden he was introduced to this world where color didn't matter, okay? And he was in the military for 25 years. He retired, and my dad retired to Southern Virginia, and I was 11 years old, and all of a sudden I saw things in my dad I hadn't seen before and heard him saying things I hadn't heard before. He clicked back into Southern mindset. Okay, and we were living in a place that, you know, we were the only non-white family, or one of the only non-white families in the neighborhood, and we started hearing him talking about race a lot. He hadn't done that when I was younger because we were in the military, and my mom's kind of weird. My mom's from Hawaii, my grandmother, my mom's mom's Puerto Rican, long story. So, you know, we went from being this kind of multicultural, whatever, family living all over the world to Southern Virginia, or south of Richmond, and in the late 70s, early 80s, and it was just, he just clicked back, okay? And little things reminded him of his growing up, even though this was the 80s. And I had given my life to Christ before we moved to Southern Virginia, and I was bugging my mom, I want to go to church, I want to go to church. My family wasn't really big on church. And one day, my mom was like, I'm going to take the kids to that church down the street. And my dad's like, is it a white church or a black church? And my mom's like, I never thought about that, because my mom's from Hawaii. She didn't think like that. And she's like, well, the guy who invited me, the pastor, he's white. And my dad's like, I'm not going. And he's like, they're not going to welcome me. And my mom's like, no, he invited me. It was really nice. And my dad's like, you're from Hawaii. That's exotic. You know, he'll be fine. They're fine with you, but he will not be fine with me. And so, you know, with fear and trepidation, we went to church that Sunday. The man remembered my mom. He had actually invited her to church 6 months previously. He remembered my mom, welcomed her from the pulpit, remembered her name, and it was just this great time. Well, later that week, my mom and us kids pull up to our house, and we see my dad's car there, and we see this car with all these Jesus bumper stickers. And my mom's like, oh, my gosh. And we're like, what? And she's like, I've seen this on TV. Like, in the South, the pastor goes and visits people who were new to the church. And we just visited that church. I bet you this is the pastor from that church. And we're like, okay. And she's like, your dad hates church. Like, your dad's going to, like, cuss him out. And he's white. And oh, my gosh. And so, you know, we're still kind of getting used to this kind of even thinking as kids. And so we walk in, and this you know, white Southern pastor is laughing with my black Southern dad, and my dad's like, this guy's great. I just gave my life to Jesus. And my dad's walking with Jesus to this day. So that guy ignored the cultural barriers that my dad had. He ignored my dad's bitterness from his growing up and reached out to my dad. And that man is still a part of our lives to this day. He is our family pastor for life. He stuck with us. So he's gone on and pastored in Pennsylvania and all sorts of places. And when our family, even when my husband and I went to go into this ministry, we called Pastor Kurt, because even though he lived in Pennsylvania and he pastored a church there, he was like, I'll meet with you this week. This is huge what God's doing in you. And he met with us that week. He just makes time for my family. He also told us, when Marshall and I were going into this ministry, he said, I said, how did you remember my mom's name when I was a kid and we walked in the church? And he was like, when I meet people, he's like, I have, and he pulled it out. He said, I have this little, like, I don't know, flip spiral notebook tiny thing, and I don't know what you call those. And he's like, I write their name down and the date I met them. And then I just go through, and I, in my quiet times, I just pray over the names of people I met. And he said, I'd been praying for your family for 6 months, and then your mom walked in. And my family life's completely different. I had been praying. I had been a Christian for 2 years before my dad got saved, and I'd been praying for my family. And little did I know that God would use this small little church to completely change my family. So my mom, my dad, my brother, and I all got baptized together in that church. That guy reached across the barriers. So some final tips. Pray before you go out with your kids. Pray that your antenna would be up. And although you're saying, Tommy, get down from the tree, and Susie, get back over here, take the time to notice the person in the corner who maybe isn't talking to anybody, or, you know, might be from another nation and doesn't even feel comfortable or welcome. Keep some Jesus DVDs or literature on hand. I completely forgot to bring those. I have, like, in my basement, we have probably like 600 in all these different languages. So maybe I'll get them to you. And I just have some in my car. And so I've literally just said to people, do you speak any of these languages? And they've said, yeah, I speak that one. I'm like, here, it's a present for you. Okay. In fact, the Indian neighborhood that I talked about, that it's over off of Muddy Branch Road, we were prayer walking in there. And I saw this 17-year-old girl. And I, you know, she said, yeah, I speak that language. I gave it to her. And then she was like, come on into my house. So I go in her house and her apartment, and her aunt, you know, gets us some mango juice. And then her aunt's first words is a Hindu lady, are you from the church? And I was like, which church? And she said, the church that teaches English at South Lake Elementary. And I said, I used to go there and I know people there. And she's like, yeah, I can't go to classes there anymore, but is going to start meeting here in my apartment. Okay? So of all of the apartments, God had us meet a girl who lived in that one, where somebody from this church had been reaching out. She'd gone through some of the training that Catherine went through with us as well. So you just don't know what God's doing, okay? Remember the pandas, and you can just go back over that on your own. Just questions to ask people, you know, is there a huge population from your country? What area do they live in, et cetera? Be conscious of culture, but not paralyzed by it. Okay, so I gave you that list, those, you know, cultural considerations, but be more like the guy who reached out to my dad, who, you know, there were cultural barriers, but he went over the barriers instead of being paralyzed by the barriers. Okay, get phone numbers afterwards for a good conversation, which is what I didn't do with Yogi. But if you look, if you look at my phone, I literally, this is how I have names written. Yogi, you know, Bouffant Deli, good conversation about da da da. Like, that's her last name, because I can't keep track. And one thing that I meant to do for you guys is to say, actually, it's on here. Never mind. So, and then follow up if you get their conversation. Send them a text. Hey, want to get together this week? Some people won't, but remember the seed. Okay, so it's okay. Don't feel rejection. It's not about you. If people don't respond to your text, or they're not really interested, you know, just last week at 4th of July, my husband and I met some some people from Morocco, and they were really excited to meet us. And right before we met them, somebody had walked by and seen them wearing their hijabs and said, "Assalamu alaikum," like that, and just kind of sneered at them, okay? And so then we were like, "Oh, great." And so we started talking to them, and they were eager to exchange numbers, and we watched fireworks with them, the first time I've ever seen fireworks, and it was great. And I texted her, she responded, and then this week I was like, "Hey, want to get together?" I still haven't heard anything, and that's okay. And if she never responds, fine. You know, that's fine. She was initially interested in this friendship, and it just fizzled. That's fine, because I'm looking for the soil that's ready, right? So I'm not feeling rejected by her. I'm fine, okay? Have faith for one immigrant friend. That's my prayer for you guys, is that I know that you're not going to be able to do what I do and meet, you know, tons of people. And, you know, my one son's in college. My other one is just this self-sufficient, not in a bad way, but, like, he's just a together 15-year-old who just, like, wakes himself up and just does his schedule on his own, whatever. So, yeah, I don't know how that happened. Like, he keeps me in check. But anyway, so I know that you're not going to be able to manage tons and tons of relationships. So if everyone here just had one friend, though, just have faith for one, that God really will just let you press in with one. And then have fun. I mean, I've enjoyed, you know, learning how to make Chinese dumplings from scratch. That was fun, you know? I didn't know that's what I was doing. I was supposed to be going over for Bible study, and the lady's like, "We're going to do Bible study while we make dumplings." And I was like, okay. So we're like talking about Jesus, rolling out the dough, and it's just fun, okay? God loves to use weak vessels. And I've gone over, so I don't know, can I tell this story or not? Okay. All right. So a long, long time ago, back when I was in college, I went to Daytona Beach, Florida on a beach reach sort of thing. It was like the purpose was for all these Christians to descend on Beach Week in Daytona. That was when before it moved to Panama City to be the crazy place, and to just share the gospel with people. And we were getting training and then being sent out. And so every morning we'd get training, every afternoon and evening we'd be out in the community, out on the beach and in bars and wherever and sharing the gospel. And then at night they had testimony time. And by day four, a friend of mine and I, we were like, we're done. We look like fools. Nobody's listening to us. Everyone's having these awesome testimonies of people getting saved, and we don't have any stories. We're at the beach. We paid a lot of money to be here, so we're going to go like 20 blocks down where no other people from our campus ministry will see us, and we're just going to have a day off and be at the beach. Like, forget this, all right? So, and you could tell who was with the conference because they had us all wearing these little bracelets that said Campus Crusade, da-da-da. So we're like, yeah, we're going to go far from them. So we go 20 blocks down the beach, and we're sitting on the beach, and we get hungry, so we go into this McDonald's, and we're in line. And it's all college students because it's, you know, spring break. And these guys in front of us were cute. There were four of them. They were cute. And they were wearing, like, Jesus t-shirts. And we're like, oh, my gosh, they're cute. They're Christians. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so we start talking to them. And we're like, you know, this day is really paying off. It's awesome. And then the cutest one says, "Hey, you guys are with crew?" And we're like, yeah. And they're like, "What?" He's like, "Why don't we all go and sit with different people at McDonald's and share the gospel, and then we'll meet up afterwards and see what happens." And we're like, are you serious? You can't say no, right? It's like he knew what we were there for. He wasn't with our organization. He wasn't wearing the bracelet, but yeah. So we're like, okay, yeah, sure, we're going to do it. So I went, and I see this girl. I'm like, "Hi, can I sit with you guys?" They're like, "Yeah." And I'm like, they said, "Yeah, okay." So I sit down. And the girl, Campus Crusade for Christ, what they used to be called, and they have this thing called the Four Spiritual Laws. And so I was like, "Can I share something with you guys?" It's like two girls, actually, and they're like, "Sure." And so I'm just reading it to them. I'm like, "God has a wonderful plan for your life, but you're a sinner, and you need to be saved, and, you know, but, you know, you're separated from God, and Jesus came, and he bridged the whatever." Okay, and so I'm like, you know, and then this just popped in my head. And I'm sure I didn't sound as bad as that, but my heart, that's where my heart sounded, okay? My heart was like, "I can't believe I'm doing this." So, and I had no faith. I was just like, I've been doing this all week, and no one's gotten saved. So, whatever. So anyway, at the end, it popped in my head to say, you know, later tonight, you might be at a party, and you might look around and go, this isn't what I want my life to be all about. And I was like, and you might get back, just leave the party and go back to your hotel room and pull this pamphlet out and read it. And you can pray, and you can receive Christ. You don't have to use these words. You can, use your own words. And they're like, okay. And it was like so awkward. And I was like, well, okay, I'm going to go with my friends now. See you. Thanks. So I went with my friends. Fast forward 6 months. Okay. So, starting a whole new semester of college. Summer had come, I had finished that semester, summer had come, I'm back at college, first day of classes, I hear, looking around, and I see a guy, and he's like, hey, and he was from my campus ministry, and he's like, you'll never guess what happened, and I'm like, what? And he's like, I did a summer mission trip in Hawaii, and I'm like, cool, and I'm thinking he's going to say he met like a relative of mine or something, some of them like are in the tourism industry there, and he's like, one night, we were all sitting on the beach telling our testimony, and this one girl says, I've only been a Christian like 2 or 3 months. And she was like, I was on spring break in Florida. And she remembered my name, Tammy Richardson from James Madison University, came up and sat down with us and she shared the gospel. And she said that later I might be at a party and feel empty and realize that's not what life's all about. And that's exactly what happened. I was at a party. And I was like, this is not what I want life to be about. And I went back to my hotel room and I pulled out the pamphlet and I became a Christian. And because she had been involved with Crew, when I went back to Purdue University, I got involved with Crew and I signed up to come and share the gospel with people on the beach in Hawaii because that's how I got saved. And I was crying. I couldn't believe it. Like, there is power in God's word even when we don't have faith. There is power in the truth of the Lord even when we are being a weak vessel who just wants to go have fun on the beach with some cute Christian guys. Okay? So that's the story I want to leave you with. And I just want to encourage you guys to pray. So that's it. You were going to pray with people? So, or do you want me to pray?
Yeah, will you pray?
Okay. So I'm just going to close in a word of prayer. Lord, I thank you that you use weak vessels, because at the end of the day, that's what all of us are. We have bad attitudes sometimes. We don't have quiet times as much as we should. And it's hard, just living life with our first world problems, frankly. And some of our problems aren't just first world problems. Some of our problems are mothers with cancer, sisters in rebellion, husbands who are distant, and I recognize that as well, Lord. But your word is true, and you are faithful, and you love people more than we ever could. And so we just recommit ourselves to be vessels used in your hands, Lord. And Lord, I pray for each woman here that if they came in with fear of talking to somebody of another faith, that they would walk out with even a mustard seed of faith, and that they would maybe have a different lens as they're at the park or at the library or at karate lessons or music classes or taking a walk in the neighborhood, Lord. And just reach out and say hi or do whatever that you put on their heart, even if they freeze up and say, where's the applesauce, Lord? I just ask that you would just bolster the faith of people here and that you would use their weak vessels, that we would not use our weakness as an excuse to shy away from speaking your truth and to being light in darkness. And pray all of these things in your holy name. Amen.